Project Lawful aka Plane Crash by Yarwane aka Eliezer Yudkowsky and Lynn Tamande. My fun research project has more existential risk than I anticipated. Episode 135.
PL Timestamp, Day 20, 16, Long Night.
High Priest Pharaoh Mylol will speak to you now, Lady Eulalia Avaricia de Seguer. It's not a request and doesn't sound like one.
She has no particular idea what he wants, but one doesn't mess with High Priests. That's not a title one got 2 weeks ago, because Project Lawful's handing authority out like candy. She goes in.
This place is very cold and very flat, and has no particular distinguishing features. Miles away, there is smoke in the air, as from a chimney. Farther miles away, there's a big soap bubble force field kind of thing.
World wound. She's not, in fact, an idiot. She is confused. There's a forbiddance. Someone could have knocked her unconscious and carried her outside it, or it could be an illusion. Well, trying to will away an illusion is cheap. She looks at the ground in front of her, closely. Tries to disbelieve it, to brush aside the magic standing between her senses and reality. While she does this, she curtsies, perfectly, just in case she's standing in the High Priest's office. She hopes she's standing in the High Priest's office. It is miserably, horribly cold.
It is in fact an illusion, obviously, but a sufficiently high-level one that Lady Avaricia can go on feeling horribly cold for a while. Welcome to the World Wound, Lady Eulalia Avaricia de Seguer, heir of Girona County. 3 weeks ago, I ran an installation here. Miss it quite a lot, in fact. Serving out a tour of duty here is something that excellently tempers a chellish citizen. Makes you wonder why your mother didn't send you here, really. You could have learned so many valuable lessons. Do you know why your mother didn't send you here, Lady Eulalia Avaricia de Seguer? Why most noble children don't get sent here, as would be, in my own opinion, immensely beneficial to the Chelish state?
Because it's horrible and full of demons and peasants. She has a feeling she should not voice that guess. We'd die like flies, High Priest. It's well known that a young noble in a situation where they plausibly might die by freak accident always will.
Your mother can certainly afford a resurrection spell if you die like a fly once or thrice. But if you want to act stupid about it, go ahead. Just means the conversation takes a bit longer. Cold's not bothering me. I'll be astonished if you're not thinking that the real answer is that this place is beneath you. That, in fact, is why the crown doesn't instruct the nobles that they've got to send their children here before they can inherit. It'd serve the Chelish state, but not the church. It wouldn't be good for Asmodeanism. Do you believe you already understand why not?
It would teach Cheliax's leaders the habits of peasants, drudgery and idiocy and mindless obedience. I'm not persuaded that serves the state, let alone the church. I think people are best ruled by their superiors, actually, and it's not all in the blood.
They tried sending noble children to the World Wound back when. It was an obvious enough idea for preventing Chelish nobility from going the way of the weak, useless fops in other countries. Problem is, this place doesn't kill noble children. It breaks them in a way that even true resurrection and greater restoration can't fix. To be specific, it breaks their pride. Pride has always been the one of our Lord's domains that I've understood the least. My specialty among our Lord's concerns is tyranny, and that alone. I genuinely don't understand what he sees in people like you. Never have. Always seemed to me like I could eat a pile of raw meat and vomit, a more useful tyrant than most Chelish nobles. One thing I'm sure of, though. Whatever it is that the likes of you possess, it's not real pride. Not what our Lord really wishes mortals were like, just some seed or shadow. I can't imagine that a proper devil reshaped to our Lord's will could have their pride broken by the world wound. But then, not every child of nobility has their pride irrevocably broken by the world wound. Among the ones who do get sent there, punished or cast away. The vast majority of them, yes, but not all. Maybe you'd be one of the ones whose pride the world wound couldn't break, no more than it could break a devil reforged in hell to our Lord's true will. Can you guess how the world wound breaks children with false pride, child?
The living conditions are miserable, and everyone around you is a peasant, and even if they're impressed at first, they stop being so, if you can't actually hurt them, and then you pick up the habits of peasants, like I said, and end up no better than other people. She wouldn't dream of correcting a priest about theology, but she thinks that if you think of it as pride, you already have a problem. The thing you want is to be superior to other people. Not smarter than them, necessarily, or richer than them. Not necessarily possessed with authority over them. Just worth more than them. She is worth more than other people. Pride is just knowing it.
Even the noble children of Cheliax, as far beneath hell standards as they fall, are not that weak in their pride. The world wound breaks pride by being real. Run into a superior force of demons, you've got to flee. Doesn't matter what arguments you invent for why they're beneath you, they don't care. They don't argue with you and win, they don't strut their contempt as they ignore you. They're just straightforwardly trying to kill you. It's that lack of caring that breaks the noble children. Not the way that other people make a point out of ignoring them. The way the world around them doesn't notice their existence on a fundamental level. The demons don't give a shit. The cold doesn't give a shit. The work shifts don't give a shit. You can survive them, but you've got to change to survive them on their terms. Learning to survive at the world wound is like waking out of a dream, Lady Avaricia. Like seeing through an illusion. And for most noble children, it turns out their pride was just part of that dream.
Can we send my sister there?
For all that he reacts, you could get the impression that she tried speaking to something that doesn't care about her existence at all. Like the cold that her senses tell her is freezing her to the bone. You understand why I'm taking my valuable time to tell you all this, kid?
I, too, am surrounded by peasants. And a situation that I can't command to be less annoying. I assume you'd like me to make a more interesting mistake than that, because it'll be useful to your project if I learn to be commanded by peasants without becoming one.
Project Lawful is far more lethal and unforgiving than the world wound. One accidental word that gets Keltham looking in the wrong direction is as deadly to Cheliax's interests as a full world wound breach, except more irreparable. Because we can't just teleport in the army to fight it back. That deadly stray word doesn't look as lethal as a 5-story fire-spitting demon. That's a problem. I don't give a flying fuck about whether you make it out with your pride intact. The moment your mother handed you over to Project Lawful, your usefulness to the church as a proud heir to Girona County was finished. You come out of this as a duchess, or you end up as a heretical future paving stone. Wake up, kid. Keep your pride in the process, lose it, whatever. The church no longer gives a shit. Seemed like a priest ought to tell you that, since maybe you'd been told differently at some point.
This really does not seem like the kind of lecture one argues with. She waits to see if he has more to say.
When you end up in my office with pain being applied to you, it indicates you've made a mistake. Whimsical cruelty is more Subirak's thing. You poked a dangerous thing you shouldn't have poked. Guess which dangerous thing I'm talking about.
She's actually not sure at all. She explained her reasoning on the salt. She's pretty sure that's it for interactions with Keltham. She was arguably rude to the Chosen of Asmodeus, though she was actually trying to be helpful while remaining in character there, and would in fact never be rude to the Chosen of Asmodeus deliberately. She ignored most of lunch because the chefs here can't cook duck, and she has a ring of sustenance anyway. I confess I do not understand my error, High Priest.
That's an improvement over all your wrong guesses so far. At least you didn't guess something stupid, like that it was Sever. Out on the world wound, there's a distinction between what goes on at base and how you act when you're out on patrol. You want to play Asmodean games on base, push somebody into a corner, take advantage of them, or just be cruel for your own amusement. That's being a good Asmodean, so long as it doesn't significantly impair their combat efficiency. Playing games while you're out on patrol, that's serious. I've never had the job before of breaking a county heiress, but I've had the job of correcting some rich asshole's son who just didn't get it. He didn't have a mode he could go into for not playing Asmodean games. Couldn't switch it off when our Lord's interests depended on that to hold the demons back. He played the Enigma, dropped ominous hints, on patrol. Eventually, he ran out my patience. I corrected him hard enough to reduce his combat capability. Demons ate him. I wrote up a brief report, and Igorian never sent me any questions. You're here because Asmodia came into my office saying that she didn't understand why you were calling the others peasants around Keltham. Couldn't figure out if that was a game the real Lady Avaricia was playing, or Alter Avaricia's game, or what. Asmodia reported that she couldn't predict what you were going to do next around Keltham, because you had not explained any such game to her while setting up your Alter Avaricia persona. She didn't request you to be corrected. If you're wondering, Asmodia just requested orders from me. She was rightly unconfident of her own ability to steer from there. You want to play games with the Chosen of Asmodeus? Test her on her ability to decipher you? Critique her outfit? I won't stop you. Could be good for her. Sever's new to her role, used to work underneath me until a couple of weeks ago, in fact. Maybe learning to play the game against you will be good practice for her. But do it when Keltham's not around. Or if you're doing it as Alter Avaricia, clear it with Asmodia first, so that Alter Sivar can play whatever part she's supposed to play. Anything you do around Keltham needs to be completely transparent and predictable to your superiors. When you are near Keltham, you are out on patrol at the Worldwound. Clear! We are playing a lethal fucking game. We do not have time for surprises from you, we do not care about you, and you will adapt to those conditions immediately or be removed as a liability.
The Chosen of Asmodea started it. She is not stupid enough to argue. I understand.
You'd better be right about that. Your next move is to report to Asmodia. Explain what you were thinking before, and set up a pre-approved game plan for Alter Avaricia that takes into account whatever the abyss she was doing today. Now, you do give off the impression, maybe it's a false impression, but who knows, of somebody with a short attention span who thinks all this is beneath her, somebody who might be distracted by fiddling with her nails, or maybe just wander off. To make sure that doesn't happen while Asmodia is talking to you, your arms and legs will be removed. If you impress Asmodia with your good behavior under those conditions, your limbs may be regenerated afterwards. Any questions before you're taken away?
She keeps her face still. There's not a lot of point in complaining that she has a very safe and predictable conception of Alter Avaricia, had it in mind all along, and would have told the idiot child on a power trip all about it if the idiot child had asked her instead of asking Mayol. Going to Mayol instead is precisely the thing that an idiot child on a power trip would do, and having pegged someone as an idiot child on a power trip, you don't get to be surprised or offended if they behave like one. You can either avoid even faultlessly provoking idiot children on power trips, or you can accept the consequences. Relatedly, if your superior is a grouchy old man who hates nobles because they don't spend enough time in the freezing cold, fighting demons, which is what all people should be doing, you're not going to argue him out of that. You have a superior who hates you and is going to persist in that, even if you're right and he's wrong. Being right doesn't give you power. Power gives you power. She is right, though. She can't help it if they're reading her mind, but she can have the good sense to show none of that. I don't particularly have questions, High Priest.
They are. The problem is that you didn't get it approved in advance, Avaricia. It doesn't matter how predictable your concept seems to you. If you don't actually explain it and get it pre-approved, it still ends up a wonderful, clever surprise, and you get to see that beautiful look of suppressed confusion on those peasants' faces. Your superiors don't need to be able to predict you. They need to have actually predicted you. Take her away.
I'm going to note for the record, in case it makes any difference, that I did not actually ask for this, and then move on. So, why was Alter Avaricia calling the rest of us peasants in front of Keltham?
I actually thought this had been adequately communicated earlier, but perhaps I was being too diplomatic, and therefore too indirect. The Lady Avaricia, in Alter Cheliax, was raised as the heir to a Chelish county, and raised believing that because she is much better than everyone else, it is her duty to study hard, and become wise and govern them responsibly. Yes, her mother is good. She has been warned she'll probably end up good too, once she's a countess. But it's considered healthy not to try to rush there deliberately, when you're young and your decisions don't yet affect other people. The Lady Avaricia is not an idiot, and it would have occurred to her, at some point, to wonder if it was true. She was much better than everyone else, and that it was reasonable for her to rule over them. She studied the matter carefully and concluded it was entirely true. Most people are terrible at planning, barely if at all literate, impulsive and violent, sexist and stupid. If you ask them how their county ought to be governed, they propose less taxes and more public goods. She uses the baseline, rather pointedly. Lots of them want to conquer Andorran. The most popular complaint about the church is that it's not out there killing more infidels. It's not just an impoverished upbringing. My tutor's children, raised alongside me, are stupider and have worse judgment and handle themselves worse in negotiations. My best guess is that half of nobility is in the blood and the other half in the bearing, and you actually do need both. Now, better than everyone you've ever met need not translate to better than everyone in Cheliax. If nothing else, there's all the other counties and there are dukes, and I have never been given reason to believe I rival the queen in any of my strengths. And so, the Lady Avaricia, advertised a secret project, joined eagerly, not because she wants money. She has all the money she could reasonably want, but because there might be people there who are as good as her. The Lady Avaricia was disappointed. The project had some children with the blood maybe, to be nobles but not the bearing. Some who can surpass her in how fast they do arithmetic in their heeds, or how disparately they want to impress the teacher, but none who actually see as far. None who can pay attention from as many angles. None who are doing anything other than trying to race down the track Keltham laid out at top speed. None who are venturing off the track every few minutes because they see so many connections between what's being spoken and what they already knew. And Keltham, himself, a child with no leadership ability to speak of, selects for his favor those who hang on his every word. Because that feels, to him, like those are the ones who really understand it. The Lady Avaricia does not blame them. They are all peasants. None of them were raised to rule because none of them were going to. The skills they lack would have been less useful to them than the skills they possess if they'd gone off to fight demons like they were supposed to. But she is disappointed, and she is aware that she is unlike them, and she does not care to be like them. If nothing else, she thinks it'd be a loss to the project. All this but my mother's alignment, wall girl, is green. Should we go on to the parts that are orange?
It's on the wall now in green, I guess, if it doesn't look like we can revise it retroactively. Maybe it should have been orange, and that's the issue here. We lie to Keltham as little as possible, but the truth isn't safe either. The fact that Asmodeus is lawful evil is on the wall in red, not green, because, true as that fact is, Keltham has correctly seen that fact as an anomaly in the light of other lies we've told him about Asmodeus. Keltham makes deductions using laws we don't know. I'm trying as hard as I can, and I can't begin to read far enough ahead of him. To him, what you're describing about Avaricia isn't a fact about her. It's a fact about an equilibrium of forces we don't understand that hold Avaricia in place, like a balanced element inside a spell being hung. forces out of Riel Cheliax that even we in Riel Cheliax don't understand. There's an Avaricia like that in Riel Cheliax. Does that Avaricia exist in Tal'Dor? Does she exist in Alter Cheliax? Does she have a lawful good mother? Kel'Thim has met a fake paladin that we intended to be realistic, that paladin would not have seemed like Avaricia's father. It's not enough for your version of Avaricia to be above others. The others have to know that they're below her. She doesn't hide that she thinks she's better than all of us. On her first day in that strange place, she flaunts it openly and without caution. Because for others not to oppose her then and call her out on it confirms her place and her power. There's probably a less Asmodean version of that pride in Tal'Dor. That's still pride. Maybe only among children whose mothers are not lawful. Good. I don't know if it's in Lastwall. I'm not sure how I know this, but I would bet at a very high probability that it's not in Dath Elan. That Kel'Thim will see it as something very strange and hard for him to understand. He will kneel down to peer closer. He will ask questions. He will be driven to understand it. Iona is not wrong that there is something of Nethys about him and his world. I'm still not explaining this right. Kel'Thim can feel the difference between fiction and reality, I think, on some level below all his law and math. He knew that Manohar hadn't really put an artifact headband on me, and his thought transcripts showed that it was just how it felt to him. What you did feels to me, well, it feels like fiction, first and foremost. A pose, a mask. And that's bad enough, even if your alter Avaricia would do it, because Kel'Thim is so watchful. For signs of fiction being woven around him, we should have picked a different alter Avaricia instead. Much worse is that it's fiction out of the true Cheliax and not the alter Cheliax we've been constructing. If even I can sense that, I'm very worried that Kel'Thim can sense it too. Which is why you need to, yes, spell everything out very, very explicitly and not take me by surprise about the way that alter Avaricia suddenly thrusts out a huge new theory of what it's safe for Kel'Thim to believe about the equilibrium that produced an alter Chelish heiress who is very much like a real Chelish heiress.
Have you met nobles in Tal'Dor?
Obviously not.
They are not actually less prideful on casual inspection than Chelish nobles. How exactly you signify it goes in and out of fashion, of course, but they are like that. And some of them are lawful good. Not Lastwall lawful good. If Lastwall is your concept of lawful good, you're going to have a hard time explaining why there are nobles at all. But it is our duty to benevolently govern our inferiors is a lawful good ideology, if out of fashion among Cheliax's specific political opponents right now. I did, actually, listen to your entire incredibly tedious speech about people being the products of all the equilibriums that hold things in the place they are, and nobles with a conception of their duty of benevolent governance is already implied by nobles existing at all in the society you built. That's where nobles who have to justify themselves to other people land. It is mildly interesting that it sounds pretend to you and probably to Kel'Thim. You sure might want a plan to handle that. Mine would be, go talk to Tal'Dane nobles until you figure out what you were missing that made reality seem fake to you.
Those are harder to rescue, than the Tal'Dorian refugees we have in the facility. I'll file a request to see if the Crown has any captive Tal'Dorian nobility on hand anyways that I could try talking to. I'm afraid, Avaricia, that we still have a problem with respect to you and my wall. You seem to think that you can say what ought to work and then argue me into agreeing. Problem is, the one who has to believe your story isn't me, isn't reality itself. It's Kel'Thim. Kel'Thim does not know all these things that you know. They are complicated, like saying, not just that a ship comes in, but that it comes in from Absalom. And if Avaricia seems strange enough to him, if her perfectly reasonable and even true arguments ring wrong to him, the way he doubted that masochists really existed. You believe that you're in the right. And what you're doing is safe and fine because the arguments for it are so right. You're not getting it. We are fighting a precarious pitched battle in which we are outnumbered, and there is no margin at all for error, because what is at stake is not whether we win, but how fast we lose. We are desperately trying to lose slowly enough that we can get enough law from Keltham before he leaves us, or maybe even bring him all the way over to Asmodeanism first. Oh, that reminds me. You may want to check in with Sever at some point about what Keltham ought to end up thinking is Asmodeus's concern of pride. Keltham getting really unpleasant associations about that off, you seems like it could interfere with Sever's game and not just mine. To return to point, we're playing an absurdly complicated and delicate game, not all of whose considerations are known to you. There are gods playing that game board, and stranger things there haven't been time to explain to you. You need to plan out all large moves explicitly, spelled out, to me, carefully, in advance, as you take your first steps onto this game board. Not argue to me afterwards about how your moves were the clearly correct ones after it's too late. Unless, and until, you prove to be better at my job and able to take over running my wall. And if you think that's terribly likely, I'd invite you to start a prediction market about it. You'll outbid me, I'm sure. But I won't mind taking your money, and I expect a lot of security will want in on the action, too. You're currently a limbless torso propped up fetchingly against a wall because Sevar is running an experiment about mercy, possibly a temporary one. Blundering in here like this on an ordinary Asmodean project, throwing your pride around and expecting others to follow in your wake afterwards, would ordinarily get you a much more severe reminder. I am considering recommending for that at this point, because you do not seem to understand how to coordinate with others on this project. You don't make huge moves like that with 100 implications, and then explain to me afterwards why they were clearly the right moves. Because sure, nobles are like that in Tal'Dor. It is not your place to decide that the win condition for your idea is the fact that nobles are like that in Tal'Dor. You come to me or Sevar with the idea, you politely sell it to us, we check implications you don't understand, we maybe approve it, then you do what we expected you to do, and nothing more surprising than that. Avaricia's an asshole, fine. It's maybe too late for Alter Avaricia not to be one too. But she can't be a revealing asshole. Talk to me about what Alter Avaricia hoped to gain by offending her classmates in front of Keltham, keeping in mind that if she was just lashing out blindly, then maybe Alter Asmodia and the other Tier 1s would logically recommend to Keltham that Alter Avaricia not get hired or not be given a Tier 1's authority.
At this point, I think I do need to get to the parts of who Alter Avaricia is that should be orange on the wall. Alter Avaricia is not scared of you. She does not expect that if she disagrees with you, you'll escalate until she is no longer capable of objecting. She does not want this job that badly. If taking this job is going to require appeasing people she thinks are worse than her. Alter Avaricia is not in this for the money. She is not in this for the power. She is in this for the chance to meet people who might be interesting. And they haven't impressed her yet, and she doesn't feel like pretending they have, even if it means Keltham doesn't hire her. And if the game you want to play is no, you should in fact act like you're scared of us, and act like you're desperate for Keltham to hire you, because we'll arrange to make you regret it if he doesn't, because we'll take away everything you previously had in life and make sure this is the only thing that matters to you. Well then fine, you're in charge here. Every other one of your new hires is desperate for Keltham to hire them, because they don't actually believe that being a massive threat to national security, who is also useless, ends well, and the fact that the last batch of rejects are presently being treated well is nowhere near enough assurance on that front. You probably literally could not give them sufficient assurance on that, no matter what you tried. They're stupid, but they're not that stupid. They're people whose lives are on the line and they can't entirely act otherwise. They're not going to be able to act like this is something they tried that might work out or might not, but which would leave them perfectly fine if it didn't work out. Luckily, Keltham does not seem to have caught on about that. Maybe he thinks the incentives he's offering are powerful enough to explain all their desperation. You seem very invested in making it clear to me that I'd better be desperate for Keltham's approval, that I'd better, in fact, think of whether I'm hired or not as the sole determining factor of whether I have any opportunity to do anything at all with this life or the next one. As Mayol put it, the moment your mother handed you over to Project Lawful, your usefulness to the church as a proud heir to Girona County was finished. You come out of this as a duchess, or you end up as a heretical future paving stone. So the question is, do you want me to act like that? Or do you want me to act like a genius kid who has never had a job and didn't expect to ever need one? Who, if she fails to impress Keltham, spends a couple years under house arrest and then goes back to ruling a county? Who knows that, and therefore expects the project to impress her as much as she needs to impress it? Who isn't scared?
I must say, I never realized until now how much of a life disability 18 Splendor could be if it wasn't in a headband and you had no way to take it off. Stop trying so hard to persuade me, Avaricia. Every time you do that, I have to redirect attention away from what you're actually saying and make metaphorical will saves against being the sort of person who just believes anything told her by somebody with 18 Splendor. What I'm hearing from all of this is that Alter Avaricia doesn't make Alter Cheliax look so great, or act like she's trying to impress Keltham, and that's a better look to his probability site because somebody like that should exist, and Alter Avaricia should logically be her. I'm concerned that you're vastly overestimating how much Keltham expects somebody as rude as Avaricia to exist in Golarion in the first place. I'm worried that he'll deduce something from that we don't want, even if it's something that's not true. The more it surprises him, the more it narrows down which surviving realities he's still in. And that's our loss condition on the whole project. He does not need to think that governance would send him anyone rude. They could have just all been filtered out earlier. As for how worried you need to be about failing out of Keltham's project, Sevar's going incredibly far out of her way to make that less scary than usual. If that's not unscary enough for you to act unafraid, then you're a liability, because we're all going to end up in more stressful situations than that. Places where we might blow the whole project before this is over. I'm still considering whether we should be trying to undo any of these moves, but let's say we don't. Are you considering a romance arc where Avaricia gradually gets more impressed with Keltham and switches from being rude to him to trying to please him more?
No. I was planning to keep not giving him the time of day. Seems implausible for all the girls to fall all over him. Maybe eventually he realizes he doesn't have to put up with that.
All right, good. I'll tell security to monitor your thoughts about that for signs of changes, though. Among the considerations you haven't been read in on, for sheer lack of time and to avoid distractions, is that there's something like an unshattered prophecy about Keltham landing in a plane containing women who might fall for him. Keltham is very aware of that possibility and knows that it operated for himself and Sevar. But we've been trying to conceal from him how much detailed evidence there is about a lot of other cases, places where Keltham made predictions, and we've hidden from him that those predictions came true. I don't think you'd be one of his girls. There's no evidence of any particular god having chosen you for that. But if you act hateful towards Keltham and then fall in love with him, well, I don't need to spell out how stereotypical that would be, do I? If you do fall in love, we'll almost certainly have to hide it from him under those circumstances.
Noted. I don't hate him. I'm just continuing to reserve judgment about whether he's worth my time, as an individual separate from the things he knows about a more mathematically advanced society. I don't hate you either. I just have arrived at a judgment on the same question with respect to you, and it's that you are a peasant in a job that needs a ruler.
Asmodia doesn't bother trying to conceal her smile. She's genuinely amused and wants Avaricia to know it. Oh, we have all sorts of special Project Lawful girls around here, in the jobs that require them. We have Nethys's chosen safety officer, Caden Kalian's chosen faithful Asmodean who delivers warnings and cookies, the asexual who stands back and watches it all. Keltham doesn't know I'm a true asexual, by the way. That would be too much confirmation of one of his predictions. He thinks maybe I'll start to desire him at some point. And of course, Carissa Savar herself. Possibly, there's room for a ruler in the mix, somewhere, if you don't hate him. If you think the wall needs a ruler operating it, though, I suspect you're just wrong, what with the god who improved my ability to do that having chosen me instead of you. Now, supposing for now that we accept your story, Keltham asks you why you referred to Maritzel as a peasant. After all, though Keltham doesn't say this out loud, Maritzel was, according to the story that she gave him, the daughter of a priest of Asmodeus who went looking for high intelligence fathers and grew up in a temple. He's quietly wondering whether peasant means something other than what we told him, or if we were lying about everyone's backgrounds. How does Alter Avaricia respond? You tell me that, like literally answer me as you would Keltham, and then I'll try to figure out what kind of probability update Keltham would do about that.
Peasants are people who were raised to work a job for their daily bread. It's a very different mindset from mine. People like Maritzel think of themselves as different from people who grew up on a farm, and there are differences, but they're a lot smaller than the difference between being raised to work a job and not. I still wouldn't have called her that after she'd done a world wound tour, if she'd done one. War is the sort of thing that changes. The things about you peasant says.
So I'm a peasant, says Keltham. And the chief executive of civilization is a peasant, and only people who go to the silent cities, no, it was quiet cities, are not peasants. I'm confused. Is being a noble not work, or does it not get paid? And why would the world wound change that? Fighting at the world wound is work. Yes, I can tell my model of Keltham isn't perfect. You're welcome to predict out loud what he'll say, and if you do a more accurate prediction, maybe you get my job.
It sounds like your civilization doesn't have this distinction. If you and the chief executive of civilization would be in the same category by it, nobles don't work for pay. Their lands might grow more productive and earn them more tax revenue if they're governed wisely. But that's different from getting paid money in exchange for work. Doing nothing in particular with your lands and just living off their rental income is perfectly respectable if you don't have something better to do. Peasants get money from selling things they made, or selling their labor. Soldiers are paid by the crown for their service in defense of the country or at the world wound the world. Those produce different mindsets. Though, honestly, historically, the origin of the distinction is probably that soldiers, if they're mad at you, will overthrow you, and peasants won't.
Obviously my language doesn't have this distinction, or the Taldane word would have translated for me, says Keltham. No, I don't know it doesn't translate. Keltham just focuses directly in and asks you to explain about the mindsets in detail. It's not what he actually does. At this point he asks some weird sideways question, but I don't know what.
Peasants like passing tests. They want to please their superiors. They want to show that they belong and that they're clever and worthy. They are often insecure about that. They tend to be nervous about saying the wrong thing, and sometimes even about thinking the wrong thing. What if their friends judge them? Soldiers have noticed which kinds of tests are important to pass because you'll die otherwise, and which aren't that important. They want their superiors to have good reason to be careful with their lives. They want to show that they are competent, and they don't want to overstate their competence because that's how they end up in a situation they weren't prepared for. They tend to be nervous about actually, literally dying, because they got into a dangerous situation and weren't ready. Nobles have noticed which kinds of tests are important to pass because projecting competence in that specific domain will achieve specific goals that you have. The domain they operate in is small. They all know each other. They don't care about their reputation in the sense of vague unease about who will like them, but in the sense of which specific traits, which specific other people know they have. They care a lot more than peasants about not appearing to bow down to unjust authority and not seeming eager to please. And then, with your approval, I would say something flattering about how it seems possible to me that Dathilan lacks this distinction because they train everyone to be nobles without land, which, to be clear, I doubt. But were Lady Avaricia trying to win Keltham's favor, she'd say it.
Is she? Why? I thought the plan was for her to not seem to seek his approval. Her flattery won't land, but that's irrelevant if Alter Avaricia wouldn't know it.
You've got to give a boy a little opening to try to prove himself, even if he's almost definitely going to fail. And yourself a little reason not to call him a peasant, or at least to suggest your judgment is pending. But it'd be lying, so I'm asking. He totally is a peasant.
My model of your attempted flattery is that it would entirely fail. Keltham would neither be flattered nor understand that you were trying to flatter him. The mindsets you describe for peasants, soldiers, and nobles will all sound equally alien to him. None will sound like the careful, lawful structures that civilization teaches. Parts of all three will sound like things he was specifically trained out of. The game Alter Avaricia is playing with him, with her lie, is outside his ability to conceive. My model of Keltham nods with a confused expression and heads off to ask Sevar a lot of questions. Sevar can probably do a fairly good job of recovering Keltham's sense that Alter Cheliacs makes sense as a consistent universe, even though what you told him made no sense to him. But my fear is that it builds up in him a sense over time, that there is a strange reality you exposed him to, and that Sevar is trying to put him back to sleep by soothing the sharp edges away. Maybe I'm underestimating Sevar here. She knows that as well as I do, and can maybe not give the appearance of soothing him. She's guided him through a lot of dangerous-sounding revelations successfully. I'll send her the transcript of what you said, and Sevar will decide if that's a path of explanation she wants to send Keltham down. If Keltham was actually playing this game hard against us, he'd find Tonya and ask her next, not Sevar. But that would be a new class of game moves from him. His suspicions haven't apparently risen that high. My guess is that Sevar vetoes the lie. Different pathway. Keltham successfully reads the open contempt out of your voice when you talk about peasants. He asks about that.
I think I'm better than them. This might be impolite, but I think it's also just true, and I can defend it at length if its truth is relevant.
Keltham gives you a confused look. He asks you what it means for you to be better than. Well, first he asks you what the word impolite means, which has translated into some completely other concept in baseline. And then he asks you that.
I think I'm smarter, wiser, prettier, know more, think more clearly, make better decisions. And if I end up deciding to join the project, we'll be more of an asset to it.
Keltham has seen your intelligence and wisdom scores and is confused about your belief that they're the highest on the project. He doesn't think it's a conspiracy sign, though, because it's so obviously contradicted based on evidence the purported conspiracy seems to have voluntarily given him. He goes off to ask Sevar what's up with you, and Sevar explains to him about overconfidence and people overestimating themselves, which Keltham then remembers getting taught about in a class when he was 7 years old. That seems basically innocuous to me as a sequence of events. I predict Sevar approves. I mark that it lowers the chance that Keltham hires you. You can possibly get in anyways if you keep on outperforming at chemistry. Keltham asks you to do something at some point, and you say that you need to paint your fingernails instead. Feel free to substitute in whatever you'd actually say there. Keltham completely fails in every possible way to take anything resembling a hint and asks why your fingernails are more important than washing the sulfur bins or whatever.
Well, I don't want to wash the sulfur bins and would rather do things that are fun for me than do that, which is not fun for me.
I have a sense that there's something that potentially blows up somewhere in this vicinity, but I don't know what to ask you that will expose it. Maybe I ought to call in Ione. She has a good and possibly divine sense about things that might explode. Something like, the way that all the rest of us have acted towards him will have created an implicit sense in him of what behavior Cheliacs expects from subordinates, or, as he would see it, employees. You're going to violate those implicit rules, and it's going to bring the existence of those rules into sharp relief and the focus of his attention. You're going to violate the rules in a way that shows off that you're better than them and the people who obey them. Keltham asks you why the rest of us are jumping to obey him when you're not, and have given him such a reasonable-sounding reason why he shouldn't be obeyed. It's not what I predict actually happens, but maybe that question still gets at the repulsive energy at the center of the molecule that would make things fly apart and release heat.
Respectfully, can you shut up for a minute? I'm thinking.
Not how respect works, Avaricia, but you have the minute.
She's quiet for a moment. Keltham is accustomed to a world with practically no coercion, right? That's the core of it. He hasn't noticed any of the other students are utterly terrified of being rejected. He says things like that the homework is optional. When he gives orders, they're followed, and he throws lots of money at everyone. And in his world, there wouldn't be, couldn't be, any threat there. He has not thought about how much coercion everyone everywhere is subject to, even in Alter Chelyaks. Yes?
Sivar's domain, my understanding here is inferior to hers. But yes, Keltham does not know where Alter Chelyaks, no, where the true Galarian is, inside the spread of possibilities. He's given Sivar explicit permission not to tell him right away, when the truth will seem that dark to him. He hasn't noticed in part because he cannot read our expressions. He cannot read our voices, unless we show it to him very loudly by Chelish standards. The edges of that which slip around our control are wholly invisible to him. It may be related to how he has difficulty telling apart new non-Datha Ilani without name tags.
So the problem is that anyone acting genuinely uncoerced around Keltham, anyone declining to shovel his acid pits or inhale his noxious fumes, shatters the whole illusion. I don't care if that's Sivar's domain. It needs to be on that wall. Have you considered that maybe you have your job because everyone with sense refused it?
I have my job for the same reason that Sevar has hers, because literally nobody else can do it. And I already told you all that the job drives anyone who does it insane. Keltham thinks we're shoveling his acid pits for our generous salaries and the promise of vast wealth if the project succeeds, or that Ione is there in hopes of following him when he leaves Galarian. That part's probably true. Or that Pilar is in it because it's what Asmodeus wants from her. Again, true. Or that Sevar loves him and wants to create lawful evil civilization here. Dath Ilan has histories about people like us, doing grand projects like this, who aren't there out of fear, and who'd inhale his noxious fumes for money if there was going to be healing afterwards. Showing him that the world is not like, that would be a huge step. Sevar's game alone, her call absolutely, and her timing on it. I expect we're supposed to time it for after Keltham is turned more than halfway evil, if he ever is. If you can't figure out how upset the Chosen of Asmodeus would be about you usurping her moves there, I'll have security float your torso over to her, and Sivar can explain in person. We're doing this because we're getting paid, and nobody is threatening us, are already on the wall. Almost the first sentences I wrote, but I'll rewrite them at greater length and larger letters. I suppose it's hardly adequate to the depth of the orange.
That's the wrong thing to write on the wall. You don't want us to act like we're not being threatened. If not threatened, I don't shovel acid pits. You want us to act like the consistent obedience Keltham has experienced from everyone up to this point was the product of some kind of non-threat-based social habit on against insubordination that you haven't invented.
The existing tiers were slated for the world wound before Chelyaks pulled us for the project. We are all the sort of people who were expecting to accept much harsher regimens of obedience, as Keltham has now heard, in exchange for pay and the chance to grow as wizards and because somebody had to do it. In honesty, Lady Avaricia, I find myself thinking that the truth of Alter Chelyaks was that Avaricia was an interesting candidate, but a poor fit for Keltham's project. She's not the sort to shovel acid pits, not for knowledge like Ione, not for Asmodeus's interests like Pilar, not for pride in outperforming like Maritzel, not angling for vast future wealth like Asmodia, not in exchange for more present wealth than she ever imagined, like Tonia, certainly not for love like Sevar. What other motive could Alter Avaricia have in Alter Sheliax? It'd be unfortunate to see you go and take your knowledge of alchemy with you. Maybe Kilthem would be willing to create a non-acid pit shoveling position for you. I don't know how Doth Elon feels about that.
Alter Avaricia wanted to see if anyone here was smart or competent. I'm indeed reaching the conclusion that none of you are, and that your project is so doomed it's probably better to get clear of it now than die spectacularly with it when it dies spectacularly next week. But I assume you disagree with me and think that if she talked with her fellow project members, she'd think some of them were smart and competent after all. And in that case, she'd stay. Competence is a precious thing.
I fear, Lady Avaricia, that we are too busy about our God-given tasks to prove our worth to you. I hardly know how I'll find time to train the Most High's successor when the Most High presents me with a suitable candidate at this rate. Sevar must scarcely ever get to see her other lover, the Queen, as she plans out the new form of Asmodeanism. I have the strangest sense that I ought to send you out with Pilar Pineda on some sort of life-changing journey. But Pilar's also busy. I'm not sure she's even around right now. Tonight might be her weekly night for sweeping Igorian clear of any new spies.
That's not how to impress people if you haven't tortured them at length first. Just so you know.
She was sort of hoping Pilar would suddenly be here, with a cookie and a solution. But apparently not. I'm not trying to impress you, Avaricia. Carissa Sevar doesn't. Kelthem out of Doth Elon doesn't. I rather doubt I can. Just being wry about how you'll never match a fraction of our actual accomplishments. But it's not my job to correct you. Only to correct your story. My sense is that this story currently ends with Kelthem choosing not to hire you. Unless you keep up an abyss of a lead in chemistry. Asmodia's sense is that Avaricia is a liability to Project Lawful and Alter Avaricia should quit it in disgust before real Avaricia blows it up. But this need not be said aloud. It is, in fact, not Asmodia's decision.
If you have some other specific personality you are authorizing me to have instead, I'm listening.
I'm a peasant, and Sevar is wearing a dress that isn't bespoke enough. Neither of us seem likely to be able to envision a coherent alternate way for nobility to be. Maybe Mayol or Subirox will have ideas that aren't just. In fact, inexorable logic has now revealed that Alter Cheliak's nobility is as useless as Taldor nobility, given that nobody in Alter Cheliak's is threatening them into working. I'm drawing a blank.
That's not what she said. What she said was important for the project. And this idiot peasant is too self-righteous to even hear it. This is such a waste of time, and she can't just walk away from it. I see. Well, absent authorization to do otherwise, I will. As ordered act as I would in Alter. Cheliax, it is my sincere and heartfelt hope that this will not continue to be as confusing to you as it was today.
Message. Security, take her away and give Sevar the transcripts when she's got a free moment. Not worth interrupting her, but I do not consider this situation successfully handled by me.
Security will do that.
Carissa is blissfully ignorant of all this and engrossed in her favorite activity, glibness sword making.
If you wish to support this AI reading and others like it, please visit patreon.com/askwhocastsai. Any help is appreciated. And thank you to executive producer John Doe 7776059.